We're back. Another episode here at Club 30. How we doing, Jay?
Doing great. Season 2.
Getting a little bit better each time.
Every time, incremental improvements. It's what life's all about.
It's about the process, right?
It's about the process. Speaking of,
today's guest is all about the process, Gary Vee.
If you want to find negativity in the world, it'll take you 2 seconds. You can turn on the news, you can go on social and find certain stuff. But if you want to find positivity, you can do it in a second. You don't put on the news, and on social and digital, you find people that are pushing progress, happiness, advancement, offense, and there are millions of them. And I just challenge people to decide for themselves, because you find what you're looking for. Your life is what you decide to look for.
Just his energy. I love it. And he's interesting.
Yeah, I think that he's a really inspirational guy, obviously. He's so inspiring that, you know, 1/10 of the population of the U.S. follows him on social media. But there's a reason, and it's because his approach and his process from a 3-year-old immigrant from Belarus to stock boy in a liquor store to building a business empire in first in one, then in media and in sports has been inspiring. And it's an outlier. And I think that what I found most interesting about the conversation wasn't about the things he's done, but how he did them.
I totally agree. And to me, it's so much how you approach things, challenges, your mindset. That was my goal when inviting Gary to this sit down. And I hope you guys, the listeners, will enjoy this episode as much as we did sitting down with Gary. So let's do it.
Without further ado, Gary Vee.
He's a Belarusian American entrepreneur, investor, author, media personality, and his way of inspiring people in the work and in life has helped grow his following to over 30 million people. Welcome to Club 30, Gary Vee.
Thank you, King. Comfortable here.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Listen, we recently met for the first time. You were kind enough to swing by my launch of my fragrance, Next Chapter.
It smells remarkable, everyone.
thank you. You know what? The following day, I thought to myself, Gary would be the perfect guest for Club 30.
Thank you.
For two reasons. One, I want to get to know you even better.
Thank you.
Two, this is a great opportunity for our listeners to hear your insight on so many things. So thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. I'm humbled.
You're a busy man. But when I watch you, listen to you, I feel like there's so much passion in everything you do. Where is that coming from?
You know, I think I have very strong clarity. You know, the luck of the draw of being an immigrant, having very little, growing up with a mom who I think was incredibly thoughtful. And, you know, just the serendipity of the way my life played out, I feel like I'm not confused. And let me say what I mean by that. I don't understand how a human that's listening to this or that lives in the world doesn't recognize how remarkable it is to be a human. There are incredible challenges in being a human. There's many things always going on, whether in the macro or in one's individual status. Today, somebody will go to the doctor and get diagnosed with cancer, terminal. Today, somebody will lose a loved one. Today, there'll be macro things going in the world. Everyone knows that. That being said, in reverse, every day that something atrocious doesn't happen to you is actually the greatest. And so I'm incredibly driven by gratitude. Every day I wake up and my phone I didn't have to be woken up in the middle of the night of something terrible. Every day something bad hasn't happened to the 10 or 15 people that mean the most to me. I genuinely, not like the bullshit, you know, motivational quote on social media or on your calendar, I genuinely view that as a epic thing. I'm excited. I'm on the offense, you know, in general as a human. And so I'm very passionate. I'm pumped that I got to be a human. I could have been a hippo. You know, it could have been a flower, like a ladybug. Like, human is the apex of something that's alive. And we're also living in a great era. I know people are very, especially now, there's a lot of challenges going on. But if we just rewind the clock 100 years from today, the second we're sitting here, you know, we're on our way to going into, we're in the roaring 20s and it seemingly is good, but the next 25 years, the world is going to be incredibly conflict with two world wars, life expectancy in its 50s and 60s. Like, we have it good. My push to everyone who isn't dealing with something extreme is choose to be optimistic versus pessimistic and cynical, and you will be flabbergasted on how much more joy you will have. And so the reason I produce so much content is I believe that people who do see from a perspective of hope and love and joy and good have a bigger responsibility in our society right now to start producing more content, because I believe that negativity and cynicism and darkness is very loud. And I feel like light and happiness and joy, they keep it in their circle. They keep it amongst their 12 friends. And I'm willing to deal with the ramifications of a public figure life and all the judgment and the ridicule and the misunderstanding and all the lack of privacy and all the things that come along with it, because I think it's my responsibility that I got fortunate. And I don't love using lucky, but in this instance, I'll say it, lucky with the DNA and the parents I had. And I want to be loud, and I want every single person who's listening right now to realize, if you want to find negativity in the world, it'll take you 2 seconds. You can turn on the news, you can go on social and find certain stuff. But if you want to find positivity, you can do it in a second. You don't put on the news. And on social and digital, you find people that are pushing progress, happiness, advancement, offense. And there are millions of them. And I just challenge people to decide for themselves, because you find what you're looking for. Your life is what you decide to look for.
I love this. And so my question, you came to the US at three years old.
Yes.
So how did your upbringing shape you? And I also want to know, when did you start to think about mindset?
Yeah, late, but early. Let me explain. We were completely shaped by our childhood.
Sure.
DNA, sure, but nature and nurture. And so I believe I'm in a small group of people, 10, 20% of the world, that is the most fortunate. And I'll say this very slow because I think it may change the perspective of some listening. I believe the greatest way to have the best situation, to have the best potential, to have a good life, is to be born in this specific circumstance. To be born in a circumstance with not a lot, not a wealthy family, not a lot, but extreme love and happiness in the household. Because I believe what is happening, and I know that about myself, and I watch it in a lot of, basically for the last 20 years, I've been watching people, right? That's why I was so all in on social and was an investor in all those platforms. I believe that if you are lucky enough to be born into a family that is happy, genuinely, that it's a joy, you know, you can't, there's gonna be conflict here and there, but overall, net score, a joyous, optimistic family. And you also don't associate that happiness with the fact that you're rich, right? Because if you're born into a wealthy, happy family, you as a child are formed, of course, to believe there's gotta be a variable there of the wealth driving this joy. If you're born the way I was, I mean, when I came to America, I lived in a studio apartment, not much bigger than the room we're in right now, probably 2.5 times bigger, tiny, with 5 to 8 family members, depending on what was happening with our immigration.
Right.
Like, you can't even comprehend how much of an advantage it is for a child to not have things, but have pure love. You're unstoppable. You never, as an adult, associate happiness with money. Every time I talk like this, including this podcast, I will get comments in my social saying, yeah, whatever, like, easy for you to say you have money, because they know me today. They don't know me from 22 to 30 when I never made more than $60,000 a year. They don't know me. I wasn't public. The world didn't work that way. So, and then I also had a mom who was very talented. She did something very smart. She built incredible self-esteem. I thought it was the best, but not entitled and delusional. So she grounded me a lot. It was also the 80s and she was from Russia. So I got a smack in the face at times. It wasn't this political correct bullshit we live in now. Like, my mom, I think one of the issues with modern parenting is we don't hold kids accountable. We do instill delusion. I believe 8th place trophies have ruined the world. We've demonized losing. I think one of the great advantages a lot of athletes have is, no matter when they start sport, there's nothing mommy and daddy can do on the ice or the court. In the classroom, they can literally go and fight the teacher after the report card and change the grade. But on the ice, if you lost 4-2, you lost 4-2.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big deal.
Yeah, and to that point, I feel like, yeah, you learn a lot when you win, but you learn even more when you lose.
Absolutely.
You learn so much. So it's such an important part of growing up, playing sports or whatever you do. Losing teaches you
everything.
So much, and it gives you motivation
everything.
Too. And it's a good thing.
Yeah. Oh, and you know, my number one thing to parents is show me someone who's a poor sport and I'll show you someone I want to get to know. I've watched my kids go through sports and parents would be upset if their kid cried. And I would like run up to kids that would cry after losses and commend them. You're showing me you care. I think being competitive is a remarkable gift. Indifference is devastating.
Mm.
I mean, I cried basically every day of my life between 6 and 12 because I played everything, competed constantly, and there was not a time I lost between 6 and 12 where I didn't break into tears because it hurt that much. It hurt that much. And I'm devastated watching our society try to tell kids it doesn't matter. Meanwhile, they tell them grades in school does matter. When in reality, the day they become 22, it's the reverse. Competition matters in real life and grades matter zero in real life.
Mm.
And so I think, you know, it was a huge shaper of mine. Plus where, you know, we moved from Queens to New Jersey. I grew up in a 1980s Edison, New Jersey childhood, which meant my mom had no idea what I was doing. She knew I was in the general area. And what was cool back then is all your friends' parents were your parents too. Forget about my mom smacking me. Mm. It was fully okay for your friend's mom to smack you. It was communal, right? It was sure. It was different.
You better behave.
You better behave at all times. But, you know, we just lived outside. We got into fights. We played sports. We sold lemonade and did business.
I was just going to ask you business. When was your first business?
6, 7. I sold lemonade. We also, you know, I didn't just do the soft lemonade thing. We did shoveling snow. Mm. When it would snow, a lot of my friends in the neighborhood would go sledding, make snowmen. I grabbed a shovel and started ringing doorbells. Ma'am, would you like me to shovel your driveway for $5?
What was driving that?
That goes back to what I'm so fascinated about humans. One of the things I talk about for a lot of people here who are discovering this content, I think you need to fight to find yourself. Here's what I mean by that. I have no idea, Henrik. It wasn't like, that was just DNA, right? Like I was 7.
But was it you want to make money early?
It wasn't, you know, it's funny. And this is a huge advantage for, this is why I think entrepreneurship is confusing right now. I think in the last 10, 15 years, entrepreneurs have become more relevant. Fame. Mm. This is crazy to me. I didn't, you know, I was 31 years old before I made a video. That it didn't even cross my mind that humans would know who I was. I thought people would know me in the wine business, in the business world.
Sure.
Because I was in that. But the thought that on the walk here, somebody might say hi or a selfie, businessmen weren't famous. That wasn't a thing. What I'm scared about is people are now chasing the money. People want to be entrepreneurs for the fame and the money. Mm. The problem is entrepreneurship's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard and it's extremely lonely. You know, you're at the top of an organization and everything's your fault. And everything's your responsibility. It's like being a parent. It's all fun and games until you're a parent, you know. Yeah. And so anyway, no, going back, Henrik, I just have no idea. It was who I was. In the same way that I look at athletes, I look at musicians, I look at artists, teachers, stay-at-home parents. Like my mom was destined, genuinely, to be a stay-at-home mother and like raise a family. And like, I'm the great beneficiary of that. I think a lot of people compromise their greatest skills because they don't think they can make money in it. I think about all my friends who were remarkable at video games when it wasn't clear that video games were a business. And so they thought they had to get a real job. Mm-hmm. But had they stayed and played video games, they might be the Tony Hawk of video games today, the way it played out.
Sure.
And so I think people need to chase passion and then live within the means of what that financial outcome is. Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes it's like chasing passion doesn't mean you have a specific thing in mind, but it's a way of doing. Mm. And what I mean by that is like, it could be wanting to be helpful,
Yeah.
Or wanting to solve problems.
Yeah.
And figuring out, like, that's my
and
mode.
And to your point, I love solving problems. So that can mean, I love what you're saying. So that can mean, oh, you're destined to become an engineer.
Exactly.
Because engineers solve problems. Oh, you're destined to be a therapist. Because that solves problems. Oh, you're destined to be a guidance counselor in a middle school. Oh, mm-hmm. you're destined to be an entrepreneur because you're going to create a product that solves a problem. Like, I like that. I agree with that. I think what that does for people is it gives them a little bit more room to figure themselves out.
Because you have to take the first step. Because you'll never know how to take the second one unless you take the first one, which is lean into a process or a way of being rather than a specific thing.
I think a lot of people listening to this will like this analogy. I love sports. Obviously, I'm establishing that. In my office, I talk about to employees. I just recently had some young man work for me, and he was doing a certain role. And I said, hey, you're an extrovert. You're not cross your T's and dot your I's. You're doing a cross your T's and dot your I's job now. You need to get out of this.
Sure.
And I said, look, my job as CEO is to put players in a position to succeed. Very hardcore sports analogy. The most fascinating thing I watch in sports is the variable of a head coach. Because it's, you know, within a season. Anytime a team in any of the four major sports fires a manager or head coach in season, even if I don't follow that team, I kind of keep a little eye on the next month of what that team does because it speaks to the actual variable of that person.
Right.
Right? It is the same players. It's not the next season. You know, I think, you know, and you know this, Henrik, I think fans are naive. A team seemingly is the same as last year, but many things happen. Everybody's a year older. Anything can happen. And by the way, one player, let alone three different players, changes everything potentially,
yeah, yeah.
Especially if one of those three players is special or the reverse. You get rid of one cancerous, cynical player, changes the entire locker room. So in-season coaches coming is like one of my biggest fascinations.
Do you see yourself as a coach or
yes.
More as a coach than as a boss?
100%. I see myself, first of all, I think that almost every CEO and boss has it wrong. It was funny when you even said the word, what happened in my stomach. It didn't feel good because I think the world has defined boss as person that tells you what to do,
mm-hmm.
person that's keeping you accountable. I feel that I work for every employee and I really show up that way. And I feel like I have to dictate the strategy. So yes, I do think more of myself as a coach, as a parent, as a guidance counselor, as an older brother feels very appropriate. I am the oldest in my family and I was in a family where it was, again, it was an immigrant family. So my mom, I mean, from the time I was six, I remember my mom saying like, you have to take care of your sister. You know, like mm-hmm. you're out there at 8 years old, you're eight, you're a child, you're a baby, eight. And, you know, I'm keeping an eye on her and I got to fight if somebody makes fun of her, like real shit. And so, yes, I do view it that way.
So mindset obviously plays a huge part in your life, in your business.
Yes.
For me as an athlete, obviously I understood, I would say around 14, 15, 16, I started to see just better performance when I committed more time to my mental side of it. The preparation, the consistent time, you know, going into a game or practice, just getting ready. So I start to really understand if I could feel the difference, see the difference. So that's, I think, the time when I start to reflect on my mindset.
I can't believe you brought that up. I flirted with it very lightweight at around the same time, 14 to 17, high school. Flirted. Didn't understand it. The only thing I knew was, this is weird. I'm playing high school different than the other 250 kids in my class. I feel no peer pressure. I could give two shits if I'm picked on or don't have social status. I had a very outgoing and like kind of am who I am personality. So I was very liked, but I did something in the 90s in New Jersey. If you weren't picking on kids, you weren't popular. And I wasn't willing to compromise. I wasn't willing to go to the next tier of popularity because I wasn't willing to shit on kids in my class.
Yeah, good for you.
And I would choose going to a baseball card show and selling on a Friday night instead of going to a cool party that I was invited to that I should have felt cool about. I was only 20% of the class invited. I would work at my dad's liquor store on the weekends instead of hanging out. I was so different And I sensed it, but it was very hazy. About 20 years later, when I was 35, I'd been putting out content for long enough, telling people, starting in 2006, 7, 8, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, do this, do this, do this. This is how you get more followers. This is how you get more people to buy from you on email. And I was putting out all this content, and I started realizing a lot of people were not doing it. And I started getting fascinated on why. And that's when I had the early epiphanies of like, oh, the whole world is built on self-esteem. You're either confident or you're insecure. Mm. And then a million other variables of how that happens. And I started, my content changed. The first 5 years of me being a businessman content, it's very tactical. Set up this website, post at this time. And then you can start to see after I started to get like, and I started reading the DMs and they're like, hey, but if I post, what if I don't like the way I look? And I'm like, whoa, right. Oh, like my husband doesn't think I should be doing this. I'm like, ooh, right. Like, you know, and by the way, my childhood was not all roses. My mom was incredibly optimistic. My dad was incredibly pessimistic. And most of my relatives, including my mom's side, were pessimistic. They grew up in the Soviet Union. They always thought there was a conspiracy. You know, I get it. Mm-hmm. At the time, I didn't get it. Yeah. I would judge my uncles, my grandma. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, why is everyone so negative? Like, now I'm like, wait a minute. Right. They lived in the worst place in the world at the time.
Well, mindset is a tool. You don't use mindset as a tool to deal with the great times. Like, whoever thinks, like, I got to spend more time on my mindset when everything's going great.
This is where gratitude and appreciation is the tool.
Right.
Think about how I started the opening of this podcast. It's on an everyday basis this morning. Mm-hmm. This morning, while brushing my teeth and listening to Boomer talk about the Jets and the Rangers, I was like, man, good day. All right, thank
you.
It's a
good day.
Yeah, it's a good, like real talk. And by the way, it's practice. Mm-hmm. One thing I've, by the way, step three, first I didn't understand, like I just said, then I started understanding. Now I'm going into a third phase where I'm trying to tell people, friends first, I'm starting to realize, oh shit, I practice.
Yeah.
I say to myself, you are lucky. This is a great day. Mm-hmm. You want to hear something insane that I would tell everyone, especially people of any level of status? I believe the single reason I am joyous is because I have no attachment to my professional and financial success. I feel like zero of my identity is the Gary Vee or the businessman. It is completely and utterly baked into my self-worth, is baked into how I feel people feel about me based on how much they know me. Yesterday, what you two thought about me was very low on a mattering to me. It is now grown after this hour, but my sister more so.
Yeah.
It's just a pecking order. So I think for a lot of people, if you're a, somebody did something at a Jets game this weekend, they got introduced to me and they told me their full profession in the intro. Hey, John Thompson. Doctor at this, like, and I'm like, you know, I take note. Yeah, I think about that. I'm like, I see that's his validation.
Sure.
And I think about it, like, you know, listen, we can't go through this podcast without talking about how handsome Henrik is, right? Like,
it's actually written into the.
Is it?
Yeah. It is. Yeah.
But it's funny. I'm going to use it as something I talk a lot about. I worry that parents give validation to their children around grades because it's a very fake system. I worry that parents give validation on looks. You know, if a child is told, and there's a small percentage of people like Henrik who are just born attractive, and it's going to be a constant theme in their life, and especially for young women.
Yeah.
You know, you think about that, you know, then all of a sudden in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s and your 60s, I am curious about how people validate themselves. Is it school? Is it money? Is it zip code? Is it the car you drive? Is it how you look? Is it what you accomplish on the ice?
Followers.
Followers, like. Yeah. I mean, it's a very big deal.
Yeah.
And I think about it a lot.
Yeah. So like, obviously practice, you're at an elevated level of gratitude and appreciation. And maybe in your words, you go on the offensive, right? Every day on that. I think when you first find those tools, it's not because things are, you got an eighth place trophy. It's because you lose and you have the lesson, right? And you think, how do I deal with this? How do I love myself when I just lost this thing or got a bad grade? And so that, I think there's a correlation between how early we adopt those tools and start practicing and how adverse our life is, how many challenges we have to face.
and who is around you to contextualize the failure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would actually be my next question. How important is your surroundings?
Everything.
In terms of how you feel and mindset. How important is your team around you?
I would argue that there's a level of guilt that I walk around with every day that I got the super mom and others didn't. Mm. And one person that didn't was my dad. And I love my grandma Esther. But, and by the way, I knew her mom, my great grandma Anya. There was a lot of negativity. And so the insanity of the difference of seeing my parents, and my dad gave me a ton of weapons, meaning he gave me a ton of good stuff. My competitive, my mom's pretty competitive too. She likes to hide it, but my dad's really competitive and work ethic. I mean, my dad came to this country and I basically didn't see him for the first 10 years. He established us, you know? Hmm. The surroundings is the whole ball game.
Yeah, right.
With the level of guilt that I walk around, I believe that's another reason I'm so compelled to make content. I feel like, you know, yesterday I walked out of a meeting and this 15-year-old kid came up to me. He's like, Gary Vee, love your stuff, selfie. And it was funny, like, where my brain goes. I'm like, man, I don't know if that kid has got great situation at home or not great situation at home, but I'm really pumped that he watches my videos, not because I necessarily need it. Of course, it feels nice. You're a human. Like, I'm a human, but fuck. Like, there are so many people that don't have a positive influence and a decoder of the macro in their lives. And I'm so happy. You know, we demonize social media in society now for all of its, but all that social media is a mirror of society. They're, social media is empty. Mm. It's an empty vessel. Yeah. It's not the news. The news programs. Social media is us.
Yeah.
Social media is us.
Yeah.
And so I'm so happy that, I mean, and I get this, by the way, I get it every day. Henrik, you know how you walk around this town, like, you know, as someone who is very affected by athletes' performance and like the joy it brings me in the escapism that sports is, you know how many people thank you for that Stanley Cup run or your career? It feels nice. They're like, thank you. Like, it happens. Like, to me, people saying thank you for like putting a video that changes the perspective, that it, you're helping people.
Mm-hmm.
It's why we love music
yes.
and sports. We get to escape our truth and get joy,
mm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But man, Henrik, surroundings is everything. And I would say if your surroundings aren't great, starting to limit your time with people that are negative is the practice. Just like I practice in the morning, brush my teeth, I'm like, you're lucky today, it's a good day. And not like, again, it's, I think sometimes people see this stuff and they think it's dorky or like, I think it's the most real, I think it's like doing push-ups. And then the limiting of negativity. If you're watching the news constantly, you're gonna be upset.
It really affects you.
It really affects you. If your mother is negative, you can't, like, it's probably not ideal to cut your mother out of your life. And I know that a lot of people have asked their mother to go to therapy and this, and they won't. I get that. But you don't need to talk to her four times a day either and listen to her vent. You're allowed to protect yourself and say to your mom, we're gonna do this once every 2 days now. You're allowed. You're in control of breaking the pattern. Like I always tell people, complaining is like a funny game. Like the only people that listen to you complain is other complainers or people that have to because they're your loved ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think you're in control. I literally on stage say all the time, I'm like, what do you want to complain about? You don't like your job? You can quit. I understand that you have a mortgage in this, but you can live under less means. You can buy less clothes. You can take different transportation. You can not take a vacation that year. You know, like, you can do something to fight for your happiness. When it's next year, because it's going to be a political year, I promise you on stage, I'll say, you don't like who wins the presidency this year? And you don't like it, move to Sweden. I always say that. I always say that. Right. And by the way, because I mean it, you are allowed to move to Toronto.
Sure.
You're allowed. Like, you're so lucky. My family wasn't. Russia was a jail. The USSR was a jail from 1917 to 1989. You weren't allowed to leave the country for vacation. So like, we're fortunate. And I think that's how I think about it.
Yeah.
What's more important to you? I think I know the answer, but I wrote it down.
You wrote it down, so you're gonna ask it.
What's more important to you, success or happiness?
Oh, happiness. Yeah. Because happiness is success.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to redefine success.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny you asked me, was it money? It sure wasn't. And like that was weird to me for a while as a kid. I would sell baseball cards, I would work, but I would get the money and I would put it back into the business, right? Like I would get money with selling baseball cards, I would buy more baseball cards.
Right.
Like I didn't want the cool jacket. I definitely didn't want Jordans because I was a Knicks fan. I would never wear them. You know, there was very few things I bought as a child. Like, I didn't want stuff. Stuff is not interesting to me. I love when people are passionate about stuff. When I think about you, Henrik, from afar, especially with, like, you know, even like watching you set up the aesthetics here, I pay attention to that stuff. I'm like, man, of course he likes fashion. Like, he's visual, right? Fancy cars. I'm always scared. Is that person buying a fancy car to close the gap on insecurity and they want to show people they made it? Or did they grow up passionate about the cars? They understand the horsepower. They, you know, with wine for me, I will buy expensive wine. I don't do it for the flex. I do it because I spent my whole life learning about it. I'm interested in it.
Sure.
I'm curious. Last night I ordered a Cosita Creek, which is Washington State's best Cabernet, with my friend Craig. I was just curious how it tasted.
Yeah. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your history with wine?
Yeah. So
it's
my dad,
been a big part.
Yeah. My dad, you know, lived the American dream, went from a stock boy in a liquor store in Clark, New Jersey, to eventually buying his own liquor store in New Jersey in Springfield. I was first born, oldest son, only kid that was born in the old country. So it was very merchant son. So very cliche. At 14, I started stocking the shelves. Like, I lived that life that I think we've heard those stories from others. Somewhere around 16, because the store was in Springfield, New Jersey, which means on one side, it was like Union, Elizabeth, very blue collar. On the other side of the store was Short Hills, Milburn, Summit, Livingston, bougie.
Yeah.
My dad was in the liquor business. He was a liquor and beer guy. I'm a watcher, as I've been explaining in this podcast. So the summers and the weekends I'm working, I'm like, people are asking for this wine stuff. And they're asking for, you know, I was very businessy already. Somebody would come in, they're like, do you have Camus Cabernet? I'm like, no, I don't think we have it. And then I'd go to there was like a big guide where you could buy from. Mm-hmm. I would look it up and be like, this is $30? You know, because we were selling $5, $10 wines.
Right.
So that's interesting. And then my life changed in one moment. A man comes in and he goes, hey, I'm looking for this, this, and this. And at this point, I kind of knew what Opus One and Chateau Lafite were. And I was like, we don't have it. And I was like, let me try to get it. Got into talking to him. And he's like, yeah, like, I'm building my collection. What was it? The man said, I'm building my collection. I just moved into Short Hills. I have a wine room. I'm building my collection. And I was like, people collect wine. And I was full court trading cards. Do you know how many Brian Leach 1990 rookie cards I have? Like,
how many?
Like 1,000. Actually,
no way.
Yes. Yes. Like, I was full throttle. Like, that 88 Olympic team, Richter and Leach, when they did a special on them, and this was pre-internet, so you didn't know.
Yeah.
I didn't know that they were going to be, like, I was already a Rangers. I became a Rangers fan in 86 when they made that huge run and they lost in the conference finals to this rookie goaltender named Patrick Roy. And I was like, this guy, he's not going to be good. Anyway, that was when I completely fell in love. The 88 Olympics came right behind that. And the big feature, these young kids, could they do it? 1980 was only 8 years earlier, so could we do it? We got blown out, got killed by the Russians. But Leach and Richter were on that team. And so those were my guys. And then obviously that became the core team that won the cup finally in 94. Anyway, I was like, people collect wine. And literally, King, those next 20 years of my life, I spent 95% of my energy on building that wine business and learning about wine.
So you're an expert.
I am an expert. And by the way that people define expert, like, I can speak to wine at an incredibly high level. I can taste wine out of a brown paper bag and likely tell you, this is Pinot Noir from France, maybe even this vintage. And then you pull it out and you're like, holy shit. Hmm. Like, I know it that well.
Did you watch the sour grapes?
Of course. Yeah. Like, everything.
That was,
like,
amazing.
That was incredible.
Amazing. That was an amazing. Yeah. You know, it's funny, when I left it, because it was my life, about 5 years after leaving, when I left, about 2-3 years later, I started loving wine again. You know, it's kind of like, I think about athletes. I'm like, I wonder, as time goes from your retirement, do you watch the game differently? Because when you're in something, it's different.
Yeah.
And I get more joy with wine today than I did 20 years ago.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
First year out of retirement, it was kind of weird to watch a game. It brought up a lot of emotions.
Feelings.
I think step by step, you start coming back to watching the game as a fan again.
Cool.
And you stop relating to yourself and I still do that when I analyze the game because I bring up my own experience.
Of course.
But I remember that first year out of retirement. Yes, it was weird. And at times a little hard because it was such a big part of my life for such a long time, right?
Of course.
But then we're, what, 3 years out now? I really enjoy it. I mean, I've always been a hockey fan. Like,
which
I love
huge.
Watching the
and
game.
You know this, and I think one of the cool things that former athletes have when they watch sports, when they're able to transition back to fan, is they enjoy it a lot because they actually really see things we can't see. Mm-hmm. If the announcer doesn't get to saying that the defenseman should have come in on that play, you're capable of knowing that, and that makes it more joyous. But I think more people going deeper into the things they like is something I think more people should do. Like, if you collect watches, now spend an extra hour a day at night instead of watching a Netflix show, watch YouTube videos about watches. Like, going deeper into passions, yeah, I think is a really interesting topic I've been marinating on.
Yeah, I saw something the other day, that, which is a simple stat, which said if you spend that one extra hour for 60 days, you'll be in the top decile of knowledge owners,
of a thing. Wow.
And to me,
that's fast.
That is fast.
Right? You know, and I've been thinking about this, especially towards the end of my career and after my retirement, having a really strong passion for something, it's not a guarantee, right? I think there's a lot of people that they're still looking for it. I felt very fortunate to find my passion at age 6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My passion was to play hockey. Yeah. Play sports early on, but hockey became very clear to me. So it guided me throughout my life. And that's the biggest thing I want for my kids now, just to find a passion.
I say
for
the same
something.
Thing. So right. Many people are like, Gary, you want your kids to be entrepreneurs? I'm like, absolutely not. Unless they're purebred entrepreneurs. Right.
You want them to be curious.
Yeah, curious. Yeah. By the way, that's a word. Can we talk about that word?
Yeah, let's
do. I'm pumped you brought that up. I do think that most of us are not talking about curiosity as a superpower enough. And all of the parents listening, if you see that you have a curious kid, you need to become a cheerleader of that. Mm-hmm. If they want to cook one weekend, let's go.
Yeah.
If they want to rock climb, let's go. If they want to pick up a guitar, cool. If they're asking you about the Japanese whiskey you're drinking, not yet, kid, but let me tell you about it. You know, right. Like, I do think curiosity has a real play in happiness, and I've been thinking about it a lot.
Yeah, I think right now the world is in this revert to norm mode, which is like, I'm going to tell you how it is. Like, don't ask until like things get better. Hmm. Like, this is just how it is. Hmm. And this is, I think, these moments when the world feels bleak and
tough.
Pessimistic mm-hmm. is when curiosity as a superpower gets us out of it.
I like that.
Right?
I really like that, brother. I really,
thanks, bro.
I think, you know, look, I think about the people who would be listening to this, and obviously a lot of love to the man here with us. And I think about, like, what's the profile? What are they thinking about? And, you know, one of the great things about having all those followers that you mentioned in the beginning is reading the DMs. The reason I'm, you know, people are like, why are you so early on stuff? Like, how'd you know TikTok or this or that? I'm like, because I'm listening. Mm-hmm. I'm paying attention. Mm. Like, why? Why? Everything is why. And I think there's a lot of power to that why. And I think it also is grounded a little bit in not having as much fear. I think the world is very aggressively selling fear, even parenting. If you think about how parents predominantly parent a kid, they try to scare them out of doing things. Mm. Right? It's a very like, don't do that. You're going to, you know, like they
you
fear.
Have to stop yourself sometimes.
That, right?
Yeah. No,
right?
I can catch myself.
Yeah, like, all
I gotta,
of us.
I
got to
stop saying stop.
That's right.
Don't do that.
That's right. Yeah. All of us. And listen, I get it. You love them more than breathing. Yeah. I mean, it's the ultimate love. For anyone who's listening who doesn't have that yet, it is the ultimate love.
Yeah.
And I mean, I really love my parents and everybody in my family. They're just
the
distance. Like, they're yours. Yeah. It's you. It's the mm-hmm. scariest thing, especially if you get fortunate enough, if one of them is kind of like you, you're like, this is insane. Like, you know, so anyway, I do think though that parents have to catch themselves because these kids are getting fed fear everywhere. And so this goes back to the inner circle. I think everyone here needs to find a source of offense and optimism and happiness, whether that is other human beings, which I always think is the best way. But you might do it yourself through exercise, meditation, right? Therapy. You know, I'm so happy we're finally here that, you know, I believe the operating system of us is how we feel about ourselves. And, you know, these are important conversations we're having.
Yeah.
And gratitude. I mean, you start the show with talking a lot about gratitude. And it's funny how how we think will change everything.
Literally. In
every experience, everyday experience will, the outcome of that will start with how we choose to think, right? And I think the last couple of years, I went more from performance focus to just how do I feel, more gratitude. And I feel like my focus is way more towards happiness.
It's good.
Which is a great feeling.
And you should, Henrik, like, in, do you know that there's 735 million people that don't have access to water, clean water? 735 million, 10% of the earth can't get to clean water within a day, right? We get so caught up in our real lives. I mean, like you are so fortunate. You know, as long as everyone is healthy, everything that you worked hard for has created a very special life. And like, it's awesome. And you were born at the right time. Like, we could have all been born in 1643. We could have been born in 1801, right? You could have been, I mean, going back to what I said earlier, we're not far removed from our great grandparents. Think about this. If you're born in Europe in 1901, right? You have World War One, you have World War Two, you have a genocide of Nazi Germany, and you're 45 years old and you've lived through all that. Mm-hmm. You Black Plague, you have like the Great Depression. Like,
right.
Yeah. I mean, we're just incredibly fortunate. Most of us. And so please, everyone, because inevitably something bad will happen. Unfortunately for all of us, most people live a life, unless you're the unfortunate one who dies early, which is terrible. But most of us will go through very hard heartache of losing the closest people to us, definitely who are older than us.
Definitely.
Losing parents is fucking horrible if you love them. And everyone loves their parents even when it's fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, so I think on the days that are good, really try to start enjoying them, because if you're complaining about like your boss is a dick or the Rangers lost to the Blue Jackets, like, you know, like, or like you gotta put it in perspective. We need better perspective.
Yeah.
Do you prioritize the same things today as you did, let's say, 10 years ago?
Yes.
Same things.
Same thing 10 years ago.
20 years ago? Now you started to get pretty young.
Yes. Same things.
Yeah.
I've been pretty much since I would say 20. Two, like right out of school, I hated school and I couldn't wait to be an entrepreneur. And I was like, you know, probably since I was 11, I was like, when I'm 22, like that's how I thought. So I was so happy that first day of work. And basically, I already knew I was going to be successful. I was too talented, you know, unlike sports. This is why I hurt for some athletes. And I'm going to actually ask you a question. Who was the most talented player coming up your life that got hurt by injuries that you know would have been an NHL superstar, but you remember them getting hurt or, so give it some thought. But unlike athletes, when you're a businessman and you've recognized you're extremely talented, again, unless you have a very serious health situation, you are going to be successful. Unlike, I'll use basketball because it pops to mind, Greg Oden, who was the number one pick in the NBA, like would have been a very successful basketball player, but his knees did not hold up, right?
Yeah.
Henrik, anybody come to mind?
Well, I just remember not so much injuries, it was more their
mindset.
Their mind. Because
Happens all the time.
I remember at 13, 14, 15, a couple of guys, they were so talented. And I thought to myself, there's no way
they won't be in the NHL.
Are not going to play for the national team in the NHL.
Yeah.
And then 3 years later,
gone.
It was fast too. It was at
that era. That's right.
You know, you need to commit.
Yeah.
There's a couple of guys there that stands out. And I remember thinking back, oh, wow. I really thought that guy would be like one of the best players in the world.
By the way, that's why I use sports as an analogy for everything.
Yeah.
I tried to bring up one where he could just say, you know, obviously Henrik's a gracious man. He's not going to call out those humans. I wanted him to give love to some guy who might hear this and say, fuck, I would have been, you know, like the injury stopped him. It wasn't mind.
Right.
To Henrik's point, and I want everybody to listen to this. In sports, all of us that are close to it, I have a sports agency. We rep football players, UFC fighters, baseball. We all know if we're close to it, how many people don't succeed because of mind.
Yeah.
In life, it's more hidden. In sports, this is why I love sports. It suffocates all of it. It's black and white. Mm-hmm. In life, you can make pretend that it wasn't you, but it was you.
Right.
It was your mindset. You had the talent. You could have been a great CEO. Mm-hmm. You could have been one of the C-suite executives mm-hmm. for Coca-Cola. You could have been a great engineer.
Totally. Do you ever read that book, George Lois, Great Advice for People Who Work Hard?
Mm-mm.
It's basically, you know, everybody says hard work beats talent. It's become like a tag. But that I really believe that, right? Which is you can make a brand as an entrepreneur around hard work and not have the deep depth of experience to take on.
Hard work is not subjective and it's not debatable.
That's right.
Like, either you do 100 push-ups or you do 10.
Right.
Either you put in the 10 hours of hard work or you put in 6. Now, there are many people right now talking to us in their car or while they're running and they're like, yeah, but you got to work smart. And they're right.
Yep.
There are people that work hard can come in a lot of, just like you made that great point earlier, hard can come in different factors. There are a lot of people who work 13-hour days doing hard labor.
Sure.
And it might not be the most strategic work that that person could be doing. But work ethic is a huge variable.
Yeah.
It's a huge variable in life.
Yeah. Hey, you brought up Vanyard Sports. And yes. Hank and I were talking about this beforehand. You know, you have a successful business. And then you look at, I think the agency, for somebody out there who thinks, I want to be an agent.
Yep.
Right? Or I want to start an agency.
Yep.
A lot of people who I talk to think like, well, I can't do that because CAA and WME are already there. Like, how am I going to beat them?
Yeah.
Right. Tell us how you go into a space where all the signs say no, like it's already done. You know, there's nothing new under the sun. How does an entrepreneur get past that initial hurdle?
Talent and strategy. First, it was a story of joy and success being defined as happiness. My brother has Crohn's disease. He had a tough spell in his mid-20s. And laying in that hospital bed, he said, what am I doing with my life?
Yeah.
And he decided he wanted to be happier. And he decided that the marketing company we were building was successful, but it wasn't making him happy.
Mm.
So he decided and said to me, he wants to leave and start a sports agency, wants to be an NFL agent. And of course, you know, I'm the older brother by 11 years. So I'm like, I want to support him blindly. I was like, shit, now I got to do this whole agency thing by myself. And of course, my brain goes to where I'm at. I'm like, well, let's become the biggest. And he's like, whoa. Like, I'm doing this for lifestyle a little bit more. I'm like, I don't care. You want me involved? We're good.
And
I was like, we found our balance. Nonetheless, I love competing. And when you love competing and you love the game, you may hate to lose, but you have to respect the outcome. So I think a lot of entrepreneurs hate on fellow entrepreneurs. And it drives me crazy. I understand it.
Mm.
But for me, no one on earth, no organization, no person is actually stopping you from your thing. The world is abundant. There was no part of me that was like, oh my God, it's impossible.
Mm.
Of course I knew it would take us 10 years to build a reputation to allow us to get to the number one pick. And because CAA would go into the living room and say, we've repped the last 50, you know,
right.
And we would be like, hey, we know marketing. Mm-hmm. Like, I knew that was, you know, a knife to a gunfight at first. But here we are 8, 9, 10 years later, and we're starting to get very different outcomes and athletes. And so it's just putting in the work. It's not saying no, right? To your point, a lot of this talk has been about mindset. If you've said no about anything, then that means it's already over. You're actually right. It's over.
Mm-hmm.
If you say maybe, it becomes a whole different life. And so CAA WME didn't scare me, but I respect the piss out of them and Wasserman and all the other great agencies, but I'm going to try to build the biggest. People sometimes hear me, like I did it earlier, I'll inevitably get a DM and be like, hey, heard you on Club 30, Henrik's class, you're trash. Really, this will happen. Mm-hmm. They'll say, you think you're going to build fucking, who do you think you are? And I will reply. I will reply and say, No, I don't think I'm them, but I'm inspiring and I'm aiming for it. And I may not get there, but I don't even understand why I wouldn't try to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'm delusional. I think I'm capable. I've won in marketing. I've won in sports. I've won in wine. Like, I'm a winner and I want to go for it.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to take everything I got and a hell of a lot of things bouncing in the right way, the puck bouncing the right way for me to get to that. But why wouldn't I try?
Of course. Right. And so when you do start something new like that, how important is it to know where you're trying to go, like the plan itself?
I think if you go super macro, at 11 years old, I decided I wanted to buy the New York Jets. I believe there's a direct correlation to the amount of success I've had based on that.
Is that happening?
I think it is. You know, I really have this weird feeling that in 20 years, I'm going to pull it off. Like, look, the Johnson family may never want to sell it. That's not in my control. What's in my control is, will I have the capacity to create that level of insane wealth? Because I don't do it for the money, it does scare me that I can't get there. I don't operate to maximize money. I operate to maximize joy. And so I don't think I've, even though I've accumulated a lot of money, I'm very aware that I could have accumulated more. I've done a lot of high risk, high reward investing. If I just did real estate in the stock market, I would have more money. I'm aware of that. But if I want to buy, I want to get to my goals my way. Mm. You know, I'm about the process. Of course I want to hoist the Stanley Cup, but I can only control how I show up every day in front of the net. Mm-hmm. That's what you did. Mm-hmm. And much like being on a team, even though I'm the entrepreneur and even though it's all on me, I don't control the world. I don't control when inflation comes in. I don't control when, like, AI that takes away an advantage that I've built for 15 years. Mm-hmm. I control my reaction to it. I can cry about it, or I can say, fuck, okay, let's put on the fucking helmet and go to work. Yeah. So that's how I think about it.
Listen, we're running out of time, but before I let you go, I want to leave you with this. Other than the Jets winning the Super Bowl,
yes,
what else are you dreaming about right now?
So the Jets is the fun thing. And the real thing is, I dream every day for the 10 to 15 people that are closest to me to be okay. Mm. And genuinely, when you asked me earlier, are you seeing it the same way as you did 10 years ago, 20 years ago? That's all I've done. Always. Please let the people I love be healthy and happy to the best of, like, God's choices. And two, put on my helmet and go to work. Like, I don't know anything else. I keep it, I'm so simple. I just see it so clearly, you know, and I desperately want that for everyone else. And that's why I choose to do things like this for an hour. I got a lot of things to do.
Sure.
I do this because I know this is, first, I admire the shit out of you and I was pumped to get to know you. Two, I know there's a lot of people listening that don't know me. This is enough out of my circle.
Yeah.
And maybe have seen me at the Garden or this and that, or maybe you've seen one thing about me. And I'm hoping that it inspires someone to be like, to think, like, my whole life is based on humans saying things that made me think differently. My whole life.
Yeah.
There was a really raunchy thing. I think this will be fun to say. It'll be a funny gag to end with. When I was 14, there was this 85-year-old, super old school, 85-year-old liquor salesman that called on my dad's account. I was 15. And, like, he was 85 in 1990, so he was, like, incredibly politically incorrect. When I think back to him, I don't think he said anything that was politically correct. This is actually one of the least politically incorrect things he said to me. I was, like, talking to him. Now I was 16, he was a little bit older, and I was talking about hiring because I was starting to help hire for my dad's store. I was talking about this, about hiring. I was like, Willie, you know, like, he goes, kid, let me tell you something. You never know what you got until you sleep with it. And what he was saying in a raunchy way is, I'm not going to know if the person's a good worker until they start working.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think about that kind of stuff. And so that's the stuff that I, like, I think we need more perspective. And I'm hopeful to inspire someone. Willie saying that to me shaped my perception on hiring. I went on to hire 10,000 people in the next 20 years between all my companies. That helped me. A single man while I was stocking a shelf for 2 seconds. Somebody is literally on an elliptical right now. And one of the things the three of us said here will shape a different perspective. And my intent is for their life to be better because of it, because that's nice, and nice is good.
I love it. Thank you so
Thank
much,
you.
Gary. Yes, it was thanks, so Gary. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
That was awesome. Great. All right, that was Gary V. Everyone, takeaways, Jay?
I'm interested to hear, to see whether the DMs or our direct, or the comment section, what that brings, and whether we can get Gary to answer some questions in there as well.
I love the sit down.
Yeah.
I love the fact that, you know, when we do meet new people, that how much you can learn. And I was really inspired to how he, you know, takes on new challenges. And I love the fact that gratitude is a big part of his life, mm-hmm. and it guides him a lot. there's a lot of takeaways for me that I'll remember for sure.
Yeah, no doubt. We're really fortunate, and we're, you know, just to be here in the city, and have Gary V walk over from his apartment, you know, 5 minutes away. It's magic here, and the conversations like this are why New York City is the best city in the world. It inspires me that Gary V. Yeah, sure, everybody knows him, but there's equally incredible people walking the street right now, all over the place. And it makes me feel really grateful that I live in the city. Yeah. Awesome episode. Awesome guy.
Guys, I really hope you enjoyed this one. Have a great week. And see you guys soon.